Joint Ways and Means Subcommittee on Education, Education Subcommittee, excuse me. And the first thing we're going to do before we go into the Department of Education budget, we don't leave. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to go into work session. We have work session on a federal grant, an application for a federal grant. So I'm going to turn it over to Darren Hill, who's going to describe this request, the application for the federal grant.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. The department has come forward with the request to approve the submission of a federal grant application to the U.S. Department of Education in the amount of $5 million for assistance in meeting the needs for data-driven decision-making. A couple of points should be pointed out is this will not be awarded until after session's over, probably, so we may have to address this in their budget with limitation and potentially unscheduling some of it, just as a heads up before that, before we get there. And then the other thing that I'd like to point out is there are no required matching state funds and no additional state staff will be needed for this.
Thank you. And we're going to have Mr. Costi is going to explain a little bit more about the grant application.
Thank you, Chair Galizio, members of the committee. For your record, my name is Doug Costi. I'm the Assistant Superintendent of Assessment and Information Services. As Mr. Hill pointed out, there will be no FTE added to the department for the benefit of this, or for the purpose of administering this grant. We will be turning in this grant tomorrow. We are still busily writing different sections of it and refining it, and we'll have it ready to go tomorrow before 5 p.m. Eastern Time. There will be key performance measures that will be coming forward out of this grant that will be primarily focused on improving student instruction. As mentioned in the grant, Northwest Regional Labs will be the evaluation vendor, so they will evaluate the progress of the grant and provide key performance metrics for us and the U.S. Department of Education for their requirements. We have named the initiative for this grant the Oregon Data Project, Direct Access to Achievement, DATA. This project is a highly collaborative initiative that provides educators with the data they need to improve learning for individual students, as well as training on the tools necessary for them to do so. Primarily, the funds will be used and allocated out through ESDs to provide professional development opportunities for individual staff at the school and district level to improve the quality of our data in the enterprise of education within of Oregon. We have been working primarily with partners in school districts, ESDs, community colleges, and the Oregon University system to develop the wording and scope of this grant project. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Representative Morgan.
Always have questions.
That's all right.
I'm kind of a little unclear on what this is all going to do. What I get is some kind of a picture of ESDs helping people develop skills, but how I don't get what the exact, what are we looking at in terms of skills from kind of a quantitative point of view, and how is this a data I don't. Talk to me some more about what
sure.
this is going to do and how they're going to do it.
And I probably should have expanded on it a bit more. Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, specifically what this grant is, what the funds are requesting to do is to add value to the data projects, the policy option packages that we're going to come forward to the committee with next Monday as part of the presentation. The policy option package for the pre-K-12 integrated data system, the longitudinal growth, assessment literacy, and cross-office data management. We have all of the necessary pieces in place through these policy option packages. What this policy, or what this grant will do, is to provide funding to be the glue to pull all of those initiatives together to better inform teachers and administrators on how to use information, how to better validate that information, how to analyze their data, how to take care of their data from a confidential perspective, etc., and they become better stewards of their data at the school and district level. It also provides for additional capacity for research throughout the enterprise of education, something that is a little lacking within the ESD and school district level, as well as the state level, quite frankly.
So is is this grant in any way contingent on the POPs being funded?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, there is a hinge on those. The U.S. Department of Ed is looking for an investment from state agencies to do data work, and it absolutely is contingent. Every state is going to have to demonstrate that states are providing added value or investment in their data systems. We have been able to prove through the investment of the DBI and the KIDS Phase 2 pilot that the legislature is truly invested in improving the data in the enterprise of education.
So just for clarity then, if the POPs are not funded, this will die somewhere in the pipeline?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, I don't know that to be true, but I believe that a lot is riding on the policy option packages being approved. The way we've written it or scripted it within the grant application was that we have, the governor has included in their recommended budget level the policy option packages that I just mentioned, and that we've received good support from the legislative committee members that we've talked to one-on-one.
Thank you.
Okay, we're in work session on the request for the application for the federal grant. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Oh, we did the LFO.
No.
Right?
Yes, Mr. Chair, we do recommend approval.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair.
I'm ready for a motion.
I move the LFO recommendation to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Morgan has moved. I'm really tired. Has moved that the request for the application of federal grant to the full Ways and Means Committee with a due pass recommendation. Are there any objections? Hearing none. So moved. And the chair will carry this to the full.
Bruce is subjective.
Oh, you are?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay, Mr. Chair. I'm okay with it.
All right, thank
We're
you very much.
Ignored down here. He was going to move the motion. And
oh, well, I asked Senator.
Yes, Senator, promote her. Please promote her.
I apologize. I'm sorry, my dear.
Really?
The chair will carry this to the full committee, so. Thank you very much. Okay, so close the work session, and now I'm opening up a public hearing on House Bill 1519, the Oregon Department of Education, and we have Sue McLashen, Superintendent Susan Castillo, Patrick Burke, Ed Dennis, and Jim Carboni from Vast Budget Management Division, and I believe first we're going to have the Superintendent Susan Castillo, and prior to that, we're going to have Darren is going to give us information. So I'm going to turn over to Legislative Fiscal Darren Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm going to try to make this as fast as I can because I think the department has put together many things and they're going to run tight on time today. What I have done is put together a pack of materials. The very top sheet says Oregon Department of Education interim and budget issues. What I tried to do here was kind of pick up the pieces from the last legislative session till now and kind of fill in the gaps. So what I've done on the first couple of pages is gone through the emergency board request the agency had and the issues that were addressed in those as far as how much was approved and the timing of some of the issues. So I will let you just read through those unless there are any questions. The department also came forward to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee and presented their performance measures. They were approved. But as we will probably discuss during the presentation, They basically had the agency started from scratch and redid all of theirs, and they've done a good job of going through and tying it to their goals and those kinds of things. There's still some issues with some of the data collection that they need to follow up on, and a few of the targets. But we've had numerous meetings, and I think they're working very hard on this. It's just probably not quite all the way done yet, so we will have more discussions about that. I have on the second attachment is basically all of the budget notes. There were four of them last time included, and so the budget notes are there for you, as well as the department's responses to each of those. I'd like to highlight real quickly some issues that are outstanding. One of them is the movement of the Oregon School from the Blind to the campus for the Oregon School for the Deaf. We will probably have some discussions about those as we hear the agency's budget. But it's been an issue that started last time during session, and the department has taken a number of actions towards that. The Youth Corrections Education Program was another issue that was raised last time. There was some funding for some of the youth in the Oregon Youth Authority that probably legally are not qualified to receive state school fund out of the formula. And so there's been some look at that, and actually budget management in the department and I have had a couple of meetings on that. We'll have some discussions about some potential fixes for that. The governor's budget only funds about 40% of full funding for local option equalization grants. We've had two grant requests, including the one that we just worked, that, as I mentioned, are not going to be awarded until after session's over. And with the interim session next time and potentially a lack of emergency boards between now and then, we will have to have some discussions about how those funds are reflected in the agency's budget. Funding for early intervention, early childhood special education caseload. It was approved in the September 2006 meeting of the emergency board, and there's more of a discussion about that on the first page of my handout. The one thing that happened was it was kind of a timing issue, but that $3 million that was awarded was not included in the agency's budget. So we will have to have a discussion about a technical adjustment to their budget to account for those dollars. Common school fund distributions, estimates are up about $37.7 million from the governor's budget, so we will have to make an adjustment there if you choose to distribute those funds. One other piece that is always dealt with this agency's budget, they have a number of federal funds issues and grants and those kinds of things, and when the governor's budget was put together, they gave their best estimates. They will be working with us during the next couple of months, whenever it takes to get their bill ready, to get new and updated estimates of those so we can have better numbers in their budget. The last thing that I'd like to direct you to is after the budget notes, there's a couple of pie charts here that I put together. The discussions we're having for the next week or so are only on the operations and grant and aid portion of the Department of Education. So what I tried to do here was the first one shows the general fund and lottery funds by each of the programs. So you get some sense that grant and aid's about two-thirds of the general fund and lottery funds. And you can see there that really the rest of the general fund goes to special schools, operations, and debt service. That debt service piece is almost all lottery funds. And then what I tried to do is show an all funds budget for you to get some sense of the all funds budget, which includes other funds and federal funds. And you can see now grant needs about 80% of that portion of it. With that, the only other piece that I have attached here is the LFO analysis of the governor's budget. And I'm sure you guys have all seen that before, but that's here if we need anything. So.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I actually did have one question, Darren, on just from my own education. On the Common School Fund, the $37.7 million,
yes.
Approximately what percentage is that of the... I have to put you on the spot too.
That's
more
fine.
Or less, just to give me an idea.
It's almost a 33% increase over what's in the governor's budget, I believe.
Okay. And also, before I turn it over to Superintendent Castillo, just to the FYI, to the committee, you've no doubt heard, you've been briefed a bit about the concern about what's come up in terms of the online testing with so-called TESA. And so after Superintendent Castillo goes, Ed Dennis, I've asked him if he would talk about that first, and we can have a discussion about that. So if you have questions about that, I think that would probably be the best timing for that. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Superintendent Castillo. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair Galizio and members of the committee. For the record, I'm Susan Castillo, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction for the State of Oregon. I'm here today to give you a brief overview of the Department of Education, its mission, its structure, and its budget. We believe that we have a good story to tell, and we're very appreciative of this opportunity. I'm also briefly going to touch on our performance measures before Dr. Pat Burke, my chief policy officer, presents a more detailed presentation on the measures. And throughout my comments, I will be referring to the agency's acronym, which is ODE. This slide shows the Department of Education's mission statement to lead the pre-kindergarten through grade 12 education enterprise to give all Oregon students a valuable first-rate education. And in our role of leading the pre-K-12 education enterprise, our goals are to ensure successful students, quality schools, and accountable systems. And this slide illustrates the strategic framework that we use to reach those goals. You'll note that there's a box labeled Budget to Results in the triangle. This biennium, we engage in a comprehensive budgeting exercise for our operations budget called Budgeting to Results that has helped us to be more focused and disciplined about how we make budget decisions in order to serve our students and the people of Oregon and to reach our goals of successful schools, quality schools, and accountable systems, successful students, quality schools, and accountable systems. So what results do we get if we meet these goals? Well, for successful students, that means all students graduate from high school prepared to learn, work, and contribute as citizens. Quality schools means Oregon schools are among the best in the nation for student success at a price that citizens are willing to pay. And accountable systems means that it's an education system that inspires public confidence. We gauge progress towards these goals through our performance measures, and I'll touch more on those later. This slide simply gives you some background on the general statutory responsibility of the Department of Education. ODE provides support to the State Board and to the State Superintendent in carrying out our responsibilities and priorities. And in this next slide, it shows the high-level organizational structure of the agency that exists to fulfill our mission, our statutory responsibility, and our goals under the strategic framework that I talked about earlier. ODE as an agency is focused on continuous improvement, so we have streamlined our management structure, creating one that is more cooperative, responsive, and integrated. For example, prior to 2002, there were three deputy superintendents, and now there is one. We continue to examine and refine our structure as we become more focused and efficient. And I'd like to point out that we have roughly the same level of staffing for 05-07 in this current biennium as we had for 1999-2001, yet we are doing significantly more work. As you can see in this next slide, ODE's budget is broken down into seven areas. Our department operations budget includes all the offices on the organizational chart: finance and administration, assessment and information services, student learning and partnerships, educational improvement and innovation, as well as my office. And you're going to hear more over the next several days about the other programs listed, which are the special schools, youth corrections and juvenile detention education, grant and aid, the state school fund, the common school fund, and our debt-related costs. And while these other programs are budgeted for separately in our budget bills, each of these is administered by one of the offices within operations at ODE. We oversee a large budget. We are a key component in quality assurance for this system and these dollars. This chart shows the breakdown of our budget. And as you can see from this slide, the majority of the agency's budget goes out to districts and other local education service providers through the state school fund, grant and aid, the common school fund, and even the youth corrections and education program, which is run by local education providers such as education service districts. Debt service is for education lottery bonds, the proceeds of which were distributed to schools in 1997-99 and 1999-2001. That was when the legislature borrowed money to provide more funding to our schools. The department retains about 1% for operations and less than 1% for operating the two special schools, the Oregon School for the Deaf and the Oregon School for the Blind. This next slide shows how the proportion of funding in the 2007-09 governor's proposed budget is roughly equal to 05-07 for each of our budget areas. As I'm sure you know, the governor's proposed budget is $7.57 billion for ODE. And this chart shows you the funding sources for ODE's proposed budget. It also provides their amounts and percentages of the total budget. And as you can see, the primary funding source for education in Oregon is the general fund. When we take a look at the specific budget drivers for our budget, they're going to be discussed in more detail in the rest of our presentations before you and the individual office presentations. But I wanted to briefly talk about some of our major ones as listed on this slide. And those include student testing requirements under federal and state law. Those have increased significantly, bringing more costs and workload. Priorities of the state superintendent and the state board and the agency, such as our focus on closing the academic achievement gap and high school redesign, the new high school diploma requirements, our efforts to create more success for more students in our schools. Requirements attached to federal funds. There are lots and lots of requirements for the federal funds that our schools receive. Caseload increases in special education. We now have 72,000 special needs students in the state of Oregon. And also the changing in student demographics has also increased the budget. And we will be talking more about those in later presentations. The increasing demand...
Superintendent?
Yes.
Sorry to interrupt. Questions
sure.
from Representative Jensen?
Just very quickly.
Yes.
What is the percentage of that with your special ed? 72,000 is what percent of your... And do you have that?
I do. It's now 30%. It has increased 30% from 1992-93. 72,000 special needs students. The overall percent of special education students is...
About
13%. About 13%, Mr. Chair and Representative Jensen.
And school districts get paid for what, 11%? 13%? What's the, where does that formula break off on?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, we are going to go into more details about all of that in our presentation tomorrow, but we can certainly try to get an answer for you today.
Thank you.
We'll be here. Another budget driver is the increasing demand and need for data collection, data analysis, and data reporting. Looking at data and using data is driving our work and increasing our workload because everything in education today is about data with the demand growing at the federal level. The 07-09 proposed budget contains a number of policy option packages to address some of the budget drivers that I just mentioned. And those include funding to bring the basic state school fund to $6 billion and an additional $60 million for a school improvement fund. Of course, we're hoping that we get to $6.3 billion before you wind up your legislative session. And just one note here, it is just really great that today we're talking about reinvesting in our schools rather than having discussions about more cuts in our state. Funding is included for early childhood programs, including $11.9 million for early intervention caseload increases and $39 million for Oregon pre-kindergarten to reach full funding for Head Start. We're only serving about 60% of the students eligible for Head Start, and the proposed budget does have full funding for Head Start. Thank you. The budget includes $5 million for the teacher mentoring program. This program was created by the Oregon legislature, but it has not been funded, and we are losing way too many new teachers and new administrators because we are not providing adequate support, and we make a huge investment in these people, and we want to keep them in our schools and need to keep them in our schools, so we are very excited about the possibility of an investment in the mentor program. And finally, our key policy option packages for agency operations are about data management. So we'll hear more about our data demands later in our presentation, but the bottom line is that our decisions today rely on high quality and timely data. And as we went through our budget to results process, these policy option packages bubbled up to the top as we believe that these are the most important for our department operations. As a quick reference for you, this next slide provides a summary of the policy option packages in our budget, and I just wanted to make special note of the top five listed under operations. Kids is about efficient and effective use of data that is student-focused. The legislature funded Kids Phase 2, thank you very much, and we have pilots this biennium, thanks to your support last session. Phase 3 is going to take us to the statewide level, and this package is about data following the student in a timely and standardized manner to inform instruction and to lead to more student success. The growth model is about student-focused assessment, and this package is about creating a better way of measuring how our students and schools are doing. We have been trying to get approval from the federal government to allow us to use this as part of how we measure how our schools are doing under the federal requirements of No Child Left Behind, and we believe so much in this that we are planning to move forward whether we get their approval or not, because we believe they will eventually approve us going this direction because it does provide better information, and this is very strongly supported by our schools and school districts. Cross-data management is about improving ODE's ability to analyze data, and assessment literacy will help teachers and administrators know how to use the data to best support student achievement. So these are all separate and distinct packages ranging from ODE's analysis of data to providing more timely and specific student data to teachers and then helping them understand how to use it. And finally, the legislature supported the Oregon Virtual School District last session, the creation of that, and we have been doing a lot during the interim. This is how we provide better courses to our districts, such as AP History and AP Math course, and we see this tool as being very helpful to us as we move forward on the implementation of the new graduation requirements for our schools. As directed by the 2005 legislature, ODE revised its performance measures and aligned them with the agency's mission, goals, priorities, and initiatives. And this slide describes the process the agency went through to develop its proposed measures for 07-09. And again, I'd like to mention the budgeting to results, or BTR, process described in the last bullet on this slide. In summary, it was a process about examining what we do from the ground up and linking funding to performance and outcomes. And this was a process to make us more disciplined, and it has helped. And this was our first time in the BTR process. It was quite challenging, but we did learn a lot, and we plan to continue to use what we've learned to make good decisions in the future and learn this process in our next budget development. As noted here, the Joint Legislative Audit Committee approved our performance measures, and we're asking for approval by Ways and Means this session. We have a total of 25 measures, 15 of which are new. And finally, I mentioned earlier that I would talk about the performance measures, how the performance measures tie into our goals of student success, quality schools, and accountable systems. And as you see in this chart, this is how they are organized under those. This is a summary of the 07-09 performance measures and how they are linked to our commitments to these goals. And you'll see a number in parentheses after each of these, which says that there are two then performance measures that say, for instance, under kindergarten readiness that apply to that one, or under quality schools closing the achievement gap, there are two performance measures that would relate to that one. And if it's okay with you, Mr. Chair, I'd like to ask Dr. Burke to join me now to go into more detail for you about our performance measures.
Absolutely. Dr. Burke.
Chair Galizio, members of the committee. For your record, I'm Pat Burke. I'm the Chief Policy Officer of the department. Before I get started, I would like to respond to Representative Jensen's question, and it gives me an opportunity to highlight a document that you've all received in your packet, which is the Oregon State Report Card. This is the blue document, spiral bound. In the question, Representative Jensen, that you asked about special education, can be found on pages 72 and 73 of that document. There's an extensive analysis of the change of population in the special education category. And it's just an example of the type of data that we've tried to prepare for you. I was off about the 13%. I dropped 0.2 percentage point. It's 12.8%. That's close.
Yeah, that's a pretty serious error.
The superintendent has just provided you an excellent overview of the strategic framework and the revision of the performance measures. You will hear and see throughout our presentation before this committee many references to the performance measures and a lot more detail in the material that has been provided to you. I would like to share with you some additional detail on the process that we followed in revising and developing the performance measures. And I'm referring in the section of your document marked performance measures, I believe that's tab 5 in your Ways and Means notebook. As the superintendent alluded to, over the last 4 years, the Oregon Department of Education has engaged in very rigorous self-examination and a refocusing of its core mission. One of the first activities conducted by the agency shortly after then newly elected Superintendent Castillo came to the agency, and she directed us to go through a rigorous business case review of all of the operations of the agency. And this work led to a complete restructuring of the agency focused on efficiency of operations and programs, reducing or eliminating silos of responsibility within the agency, and creating new cross-office structures and reducing the number of senior administrators. As we approach the 2003 session, the revised agency goals were developed and came out of this evolving work. Dr. E.J. Ayers of our staff worked very closely with the Progress Board to develop a new budget narrative that reflected this refocusing of the agency. And as these new goals emerged, we did not have the time at that point to fully develop the performance measures related to those goals. We didn't have the level of detail and specificity desired either by the Progress Board or by the legislature. And from our point of view, we did not have the time at that point to do the kind of stakeholder involvement that we felt was necessary. Some of you on this committee will recall that at about this time of year, during the 2003 session, the Oregon Department of Education presented you with a set of performance measures that were not as strong as either we or you would have liked. Some of the performance measures appeared weak on two fronts. Some measures did not have specific data connected to them, and some appeared to be more directly, or did not appear to be directly connected to our core mission. Our budget, our actions, and our outcomes were not fully aligned in that process. The Ways and Means Committee in 2003, Superintendent Castillo mentioned this, did approve the agency's budget, but it was approved with the understanding that the measures themselves would be improved. And we had improved, we had gotten better, but we still had a lot of additional work to do. The reorganization of the agency continued throughout the latter part of 2003 and throughout 2004. By October of 2004, the management team of the agency had approved a new cross-agency project known as the Performance Measurement Development Project. This was an internal project, the purpose of which was to revise the agency's strategic framework and to complete the revision of the performance measures, and most importantly, in our view, to link the performance measurement practice to the agency-wide operations. This was a huge undertaking. The agency had committed itself to a rigorous process that would include all aspects of the agency. We conducted interviews with a wide variety of our employees. We solicited information and conducted interviews with a wide variety of our stakeholders. And these interviews and the other information were all evaluated for themes that helped inform the development of our strategic framework. We reviewed the work of other state departments of education. This work all culminated in a set of lengthy meetings with senior management and the agency directors to reach agreement on what the core goals and mission of the agency were. The revised strategic framework included a mission statement, vision, goals, functions, core processes, and strategies, and identified customers. And as the work moving forward to the 2005 session progressed, we were able to submit a revised set of performance measures based upon this work. But we also knew at that point that further refinement still needed to be done. We had restructured the agency from top to bottom. We had focused the work on measured outcomes. And refinement of the performance measures needed to continue, and we needed to bring our operations into better alignment with our mission and goals. So when you see in the superintendent's presentation at the beginning that the agency is structured around three goals, quality schools, successful students, and accountable systems, and that this forms the framework for the strategic framework for the agency, this is the result of extensive planning and involvement with a wide variety of people to help clarify what we believe to be the core work of the Oregon Department of Education. The next step in this process was to take that information and to link it directly to agency operations and budget. Working with an external consulting firm, we took the restructuring of the agency to the next level. It's a level that we believe you don't always find in state government. This is the work that Superintendent Castillo referred to as budgeting to results. Through this process, we aligned our budget within the priorities of the strategic framework. The process, for the first time, included all levels of our employees, not just senior management. The agency was divided into teams to work across the agency on clarifying what our desired outcomes should be and how we should go about achieving them. And the final phase of this process, then, was to set budget priorities based upon the internal agreement of what the priority work of the agency should be. All of this was then tied to our agency budget proposal. And I must say that these were not easy conversations. Anytime you go through a priority setting within a complex organization, you create anxiety about whose priorities are going to receive attention and whose might receive less attention. What emerged, though, was, I believe, a deeper understanding of who our primary customers were. So let me give you an example. When we focus the work of the agency, we can, on the one hand, attempt to be all things to all people. That's pretty difficult to do, especially with a limited budget. We now have a very clear sense that our primary customer is the school district, as opposed to an individual teacher or an individual school. Our primary work is providing leadership to school district leadership. As Superintendent Castillo mentioned earlier, what you also see are five policy option packages that are related to data infrastructure. Again, this is not accidental. These five policy option packages related to data are based upon an agency-wide understanding that having high-quality and useful data is central to the core mission of this agency. This work finally culminated in the revision of our performance measures, which were discussed by Mr. Hill at the opening of the hearing, and they were presented to the Joint Legislative Audit Committee on September 14th of last year. JLAC approved them in October. Today, we take another very important step in submitting them to you for approval. We have clarified some measures. We have removed some that did not fit the strategic plan and that were not measurable, as I have described it. And we are proposing several new ones about which we will talk about later. Now, we believe that these measures will provide very concrete and measurable evidence of whether the strategic goals, work plan, and budget of the agency are producing clear, measured outcomes and improvement. you will see that some of these measures are system outcomes. That is, whether the overall education enterprise is reaching its objectives. And some are agency outcomes. That is, they are specific to the efficiency and effectiveness of the Oregon Department of Education. So let me now briefly turn the conversation to a discussion of the performance measures themselves. That's a little bit of detail of where they came from. And I will be brief. You're going to be hearing more from members of our staff throughout the hearings about these measures. And as I mentioned, the measures are grouped and targeted within the three strategic goals of the agency: student success, quality schools, and accountable systems. Under student success, we've identified 9 specific measures: 2 for kindergarten readiness, 2 for student achievement, and 5 for high school graduation and next steps. Kindergarten readiness is measured in 2 ways. We will be looking at improving access to pre-kindergarten programs and increasing the percentages of students exiting or entering kindergarten demonstrating readiness to learn. We will measure student achievement by the traditional measures of looking at the percentages of students meeting or exceeding statewide academic standards. All of that information, however, will be disaggregated to focus on the achievement gap. But we will also propose a new measure to look at longitudinal student growth as an achievement measure. As you know, measuring a single point in time tells you one story about a school or a system, but looking at the improvement of that school or system over time tells you another very important story. Are schools getting better, staying the same, or are they getting worse? That is a very important question for us to look at. You may well ask, why 5 high school measures? And the answer is that there are a variety of ways to look at high school outcomes, and each of them tells a different and very important part of the story. So we will be looking at graduation rates, dropout rates. We will be looking at the number of students completing a general equivalency diploma. But there are 2 new measures that we are very excited about. And they are made possible only by recent improvements in our data system. The first is an 8th grade cohort graduation rate. And this is an area that we have long wanted to look at, but we didn't have the technology to be able to until now. By this we mean that we will look at 8th grade students as a group and follow those same students through 4 years of high school and look at their outcomes over a 5-year period of time. The second is a measure of college readiness, which also is the result of new capacity. What we would be looking at is the number of students who leave an Oregon high school and go on to college and look at their performance at the end of their first year in what the term is usually referred to as persistence toward degree. That is, do these students return to those institutions and continue to make progress toward their degree? This latter measure is an exciting result of the work being done between the Oregon Department of Education, the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, and the Oregon University System to meet the governor's charge to create an integrated pre-kindergarten through 20 education enterprise. For the first time, we can measure the success of that work. These measures are made possible by the implementation of a student identification system that begins when a student enters one of our schools and stays with that system, now with the capacity to continue to follow that into community colleges in the university system. The second set of measures address the issue of quality schools. These measures are divided into 4 categories. The first, school performance.
Sorry to interrupt you. Of course, from Representative Barnhart.
I actually have a couple. The first one is I'm having trouble figuring out which one of these measures applies to that 8th grade graduation you were talking about. Could you describe where that fits in this list of measures? I may simply be looking in the wrong place.
No, I'm glad you asked that. I was kind of wondering too.
Let me see which list we're looking at. The graduation rates and next steps. The 8th grade cohort is one of those measures.
Oh, where it says 4 separate metrics in,
yes,
in key performance measure 5. So it's one of the 4
separate. Number 5. I see.
So it's one of the 4 separate metrics, right?
That's correct. right.
Yeah. Disaggregators.
Okay. All right. It's not very clear from this material, and you may want to write that in a way that's a little clearer. The other question I had is has to do with this college readiness idea. As we were working in a different committee, I've become aware that we expect a whole bunch of different things from high school graduates, college readiness being one of them, but others being readiness to go to work directly, readiness to go into some other kind of training program other than college. And I'm wondering whether those kinds of measures are subsumed under this or whether you have some other measure for those items.
Representative Barnard, yes, the answer is that we do have measures that look at workforce readiness. What we were looking at in this particular measure is to see if we could find a measure that reflected the cross-agency, the buzz term, if you will, is the education enterprise, that is the charge from the governor's office to look at a budget that reflected the total investment in education across three sectors, K-12, community colleges, and the university system. This is one way, using the integrated data system that you'll hear a lot more about, that we can use that system to actually measure the performance of the entire operation. So that's the purpose of this particular measure. There are other measures that are available to us on workforce readiness. They are not as well developed. And so, for example, the number of students who leave a high school with an industry-based certificate of some kind, Microsoft software, for example, certification, or completing a professional technical course. We collect all of that information. We also have information on the number of professional technical students who also leave our high schools with accumulated community college courses under their belts. That's commonly referred to as 2+2 programs. We collect and report all of that information.
If I could follow up, it doesn't appear to be one of these proposed measures, or is it contained in one of those measures?
Well,
in some way.
Representative Galizio, Representative Barnhart, those programs do not exist in every school. So it is not a measure that we have for the outcome of every system. It is, however, something that we would be happy to talk with you about further. We have the data, and it is something that we do measure on a regular basis.
Great. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And if I could just say, as we're on this point, this is a direction I think we need to be moving in if we're going to meet our workforce goals down the road, as we see high school not only as a stage in the process of moving through college, but also as an end point in itself, and also as a point to move off into further technical and professional education and training outside of community college or university. And I think that while I appreciate the answer you've given and the data that you're collecting, I think we ought to be moving in the direction of a way of measuring that in a more formal way, probably by including that in these items eventually. Obviously, you're not ready for this year.
Chair Galizio, Representative Barnhart, we do have some data that we do collect and that would be available. I'd be happy to share that with you and other members of the committee. I certainly agree that this is an area. It's not only an area shared by the legislature, the state board is also very concerned about workforce readiness in the new high school graduation requirements.
Thank you. If I may, I invent very few ideas. I steal them all over the place.
That's a good one. Thank you. The second set of measures had to do with quality schools. These measures are divided into four categories. The first is school performance. We will look at measures of schools that are making adequate yearly progress as defined by the federal No Child Left Behind Act. We will also be looking at the number of low-performing schools that are showing improvement in their adequate yearly progress ratings. For example, for the first time last year, we saw a significant number of schools, about 11 schools, that had been identified for school improvement and had actually worked their way out of that category. That's no minor feat. That requires two consecutive years of all kids in all subgroups in a school meeting their academic performance targets before a school exits school improvement status. So that is an emerging area and one that we intend to measure. And then finally, we would be looking at the number of schools demonstrating improvement in closing the achievement gap. A second set of measures in quality schools is the number of schools providing access to advanced placement courses. A third is the issue of quality schools. Obviously, quality schools are safe schools. We measure and will report measures on suspensions and expulsions. There is a measure on the number of schools that are identified under federal regulations as being persistently dangerous. That's the federal term, not our term. And a measure of school bus safety. And finally, in this category of quality schools, we have we know that quality schools have quality teachers in them, and we will utilize two measures in this area: the percentage of teachers who meet the federal definition of highly qualified teacher under the federal law, and improvement in the percentage of minority teachers in our schools. And finally, the third set of measures will address accountable systems. These measures focus more on the operations side of our agency as well as the emerging data system that I mentioned earlier. We will look at measures related to the output of the work of ODE by measuring the efficiency of the assessment system and the reporting of results and delivering technical and public reports on time. For example, there are 35 public data collections that we issue on a yearly basis, and our objective is that every one of those 35 public collections will be reported on time. A new measure currently under development is a new customer satisfaction survey that we will use to gather data from a variety of stakeholders or customers of the agency. And it will solicit information about our services, the timeliness of those services, the accuracy of those services, whether or not our staff reflected helpfulness and expertise, and the availability of information from the agency. And finally, you will see six new measures specifically related to the data system that is under development. Assistant Superintendent Doug Costi will be providing you with a lot more information about these. For our purposes here, just let me point out that we will be looking at the number of schools being served, the number of students being served, the ability of local districts to access the system effectively. We'll look at the number of student records being transferred, institutions being linked in this system, and probably one of the most important measures is that we will measure the time saved by Oregon schools in utilizing this new system. So thank you. You will hear much more about these measures throughout our presentation. It is our belief that we have made significant progress in linking our measures to our goals and mission in a strategic manner and in a more meaningful manner. We will continue to refine the goals. Our continuing measures, and you'll see this in your material, have specific targets associated with them, and that's in the materials. What you will also see is that several of these measures that I've talked about, which are new, will require the collection of new data and the establishment of a baseline. That information will be collected this year, and future performance targets will be based on the baseline data that we collect this year on the new measures. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We certainly look forward to continuing to work with the committee on our performance measures.
Thank you, Dr. Burr. And Superintendent Castillo, are you going to continue, or are you going to...
I think we're ready for Ed Dennis, if you're ready, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Ed Dennis, for the record, Deputy Superintendent. I want to thank you for the opportunity to talk to you about a different issue than I had been preparing for.
And I'm prepared to do both should we get through the first one. I'd have about 12 minutes worth if I were allowed to spit it all out, not that I'm expecting you to do that. So I want to just say for a moment it's a special treat for me to be here in front of my state senator and my state representative, Representative Senator Starr and Representative Edwards. Good to see you, gentlemen. In light of recent events, I'd like to take time now to talk about our dispute with our testing contractor, Vantage, and answer any questions that you may have. ODE announced on Monday that all Oracle schools will use paper and pencil assessment tests in math and reading for the remainder of the 2006-2007 school year. This action was necessary because Vantage Learning has declined to continue performance services required under the contract. ODE exhausted every option to continue with TESA until the end of the school year. ODE is now working with the Oregon Department of Justice to explore all of our legal options. I think it's important to provide you with some background. The state of Oregon administers tests in mathematics and reading and literature to all third through eighth graders and high school students, typically in the 10th grade. Science and social science are administered to students in grades 5, 8 in high school, and writing at grades 4, 7, and high school to determine if students are meeting Oregon academic standards. We were administering those tests prior to the passage of the No Child Left Behind Act, but they now also fill the purpose of satisfying No Child Left Behind requirements as well. And forgive me for being so close to my script, but since lawyers are hovering over me every moment, I am going to stay pretty close to the script. What our former contractor Vantage did was provide the online web-based platform that students use to take the tests created by ODE. My public affairs manager thinks of that as the highway, and we provide the buses. ODE itself does not currently have the technical capacity to create such a platform in-house, nor the budget to develop such capacity. However, we may want to look at that sometime in the future. Having the testing take place online is less costly than paper and pencil. It allows students to get their test results immediately. And schools and districts have access to the details of the tests within just a few days. And because it's so cost-effective, we've been able to offer students the opportunity to take these tests up to 3 times, with the highest score used as the indicator for progress towards state standards, and thus the score used for NCLB purposes to determine whether or not a school makes adequate yearly progress. Our contract with Vantage, now let me get into a little bit of the details about Vantage and the issues that we're facing right now. Our contract with Vantage began in March of 2001, and our experience with Vantage was very positive for the first few years. Originally, the contract was to end on June 30, 2005, but it was ultimately extended until June 30, 2007. In the original contract, the parties were to enter into good faith negotiations if the base volumes of the tests exceeded a stated threshold. In July 2004, we negotiated a contract amendment with Vantage that states as follows. The limit of 500,000 tests is removed from the contract. Now there is no limit. It is clear and direct. As I said, our relationship with Vantage was good until last year, when we developed a new request for proposals required by state procurement guidelines. On March 22, 2006, Vantage employee emailed ODE staff to say that Vantage itself would be interested in a way to renew their contract without the state proceeding in an open competitive RFP. In May 2006, in an oral conversation, Vantage again asked for ODE to find a way to avoid a competitive open process. ODE declined to go this route and instead chose an open competitive process consistent with Oregon law. Vantage informed ODE that it owed Vantage additional money for previous year's testing, but that the issue of back invoices would be dropped if Vantage could continue as the contractor for TESA. They did not produce the additional invoices, and we asked for them. On July 24th, Vantage's lawyer reiterated in a phone call that Vantage thought ODE owed Vantage money for past testing, but he did not provide details. On July 25th, the Oregon Department of Justice wrote requesting clarification on the claim. On August 8th, Vantage responded, saying they refused to discuss any details of the claim. On October 3rd, Vantage was informed by the Department of Administrative Services that their response to the RFP had not met the minimum requirements, and they would be declared non-responsive for not meeting mandatory requirements of the RFP. On October 11th, 8 days after Vantage was removed from the competitive process by DAS, for the first time, ODE began to receive invoices from Vantage, all of them based on the argument that ODE had exceeded the old 500,000 annual test limit. Over the next few months, our lawyers attempted to get Vantage to clarify this claim. Then, on January 23rd, Vantage informed us that they were giving us 90 days notice that they were terminating the contract. They claimed they were terminating for cause on January 24th, and also terminating based on 90 days notice, quote-unquote, for convenience. Vantage notice was cause for great concern because it would mean interrupting the testing program before the year was out, causing disruption and hardship for children, teachers, and districts, and potentially interfering with our ability to meet NCLB requirements and triggering huge federal fines and penalties. We continued negotiating with Vantage because our top priority was to keep TESA operative until after April 24th. Our goal was to keep it open until at least late May. In the course of those negotiations, on February 13th, Vantage asked orally if there was a way they could get the next contract so that they could continue to serve as our TESA vendor. They said that they would be willing to forgive the claim for millions of dollars for past testing if such an arrangement were made. That was made to me. I was in Philadelphia meeting with their CEO. When ODE declined to interrupt the existing contract process with a new vendor, a number of problems with the TESA system emerged. For example, students started to take tests and the system cut them off in the middle. Answers were filled in before a student started to take a test, so they sat down and the computer screen comes up and the answers were all there already. Others would finish a test, then the system would lose the data. Starting on February 22nd, the system began to fail regularly. Although we continued to try to negotiate an extension beyond April 24th, we also now made it very clear that we would insist on satisfactory performance and that additional payments would be in contingent upon satisfactory performance. On February 26th, Vantage reported to ODE that their entire system crashed, and they reported to us that data from as many as 18,000 students who had tested that day was lost. When the system was reported by Vantage as restored, districts across the state reported unacceptably slow system response times, students being dropped from the system, etc. We were very concerned about the impacts that these problems were having on Oregon students. And we weren't the only ones. We received hundreds of calls about TESA problems in our three call centers. In fact, in one three-hour period, one of our call centers received 119 calls from teachers and district officials complaining about the TESA system. Vantage reported that this same day was a good day for TESA and that the system had worked well for the past weeks and months. On Friday, March 9th, Vantage interrupted students who were testing by posting a notice on TESA claiming that they had terminated the TESA service because ODE would not pay their bill. Then we had two choices. One choice, our first choice.
That's one of the lawyers are calling. They think it's not an accurate representation. So
put them on speakerphone.
Can you please retract first? So the first choice was to tell the U.S. Department of Education that we would not finish testing. To just say to the feds, we're not going to be able to do this. We're not going to finish testing this year. Oregon would become the only state in NCLB history not to finish testing. By all accounts, everyone we could check with, high-level folks, people who had access to the secretary's office, the consequences of that choice would be far-reaching and potentially very expensive for Oregon schools, not just for the State Department, but down into the district level, money that would otherwise go to districts. And the less bad choice, the one that we've announced that we're moving towards, move to a paper-pencil alternative just for this spring. While this is a poor choice, and I will be the first one to admit that, because it's going to disrupt kids. I had a teacher over for dinner this weekend. She said, I've never proctored a test in paper pencil for a state assessment. My kids don't know how to bubble. My fourth graders don't know how to do that. And there are going to be serious problems with this move. There are a couple of positive things, and the reason why we made other reasons we made this choice. One, it'll keep us in compliance with federal government regulations and allow districts to continue to receive all their federal funding. Two, it will allow us to keep year-to-year data in place, and that will assist with the development of a growth model ultimately. We still believe in online testing. This is a temporary setback. We are confident that with our new contractor, Oregon will again have a testing system that is one of the most cost-effective, flexible, and responsive to students and educator needs in the country. Looking to the future, we have two goals. The first is to provide a valid, reliable test score for every student in the state. The second is to ensure that schools and school districts meet their obligation under state and federal law. The decision to move to paper and pencil was not one that we or I took lightly. We are keenly aware of the burden that this decision falls on students and classroom teachers. We will make every effort to finish the year on a positive note with every student tested and all schools meeting their obligations to the state and federal government. In the meantime, we will continue to answer every question from educators, parents, and community members, and we will also work hard to ensure a smooth process, as smooth as we can be, as we transition to paper pencil. And I'm available for your questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Senator Morse.
Can I recognize, Mr. Chair, that the questions need to be in the context of what's appropriate, so since it's under litigation. But what was the total amount of the contract, and how much have we paid to date?
We paid them $1.2 million a year. I do not know for certain what their claim is against us, because frankly, as I've been in the negotiation over the past 2 months, I've heard everything from $6 million to, more recently in the press, I've read from Vantage as low as $2.8 million. So, currently they're saying that we owe them $2.8 million. Is that right? Is it $2.8? It's in the press.
It's the total not to exceed is a little over $6 million for the life of the contract. We're paying about $1.2 million.
If you're asking me what I think that they think we owe them?
No. What you would be obligated to.
Oh, I'm sorry.
To pay them.
$6 million. $6 million total, $1.2 a year.
And they delivered a product that doesn't work.
Only recently.
Just recently.
Mr. Chair, Senator Morse, they have delivered product only recently that hasn't met our, that hasn't worked. We have stopped payment and put into dispute officially on a couple of monthly bills for them not meeting contract deliverables. I'm going to go ahead and move forward and pay for the things they did do and still keep the other issues in dispute outside so that we can eventually or someday work through those things. An example on that is they're required to meet with us every week. We have a meeting to discuss issues. And there was about a two-month period when we only had one meeting, and despite our efforts to continue to meet with them. And so I'm only going to pay them for one meeting, not for eight.
Senator Decker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Again, I'm sure you're very limited in what you can talk about. The only question that's lingered for me around this whole issue is I assume they have contracts with many, many states, would be my assumption, because that's the nature of their business. And I guess the question that's lingered for me is, why is Oregon in particular seem to have such a, you would think if the actions that you describe, if they did it in Oregon, they would have similar type issues in other states. And I guess that's the only thing that I've been just trying to work through is why we seem to have such a particularly now litigious but bad experience with this firm.
Chair Galizio, Senator Deckard, not very much of this makes sense to me. I engaged, the superintendent and I got engaged in this process very directly fairly late because of the way it escalated. And I kept saying to my staff and those around me, the bottom line will come through. You know, we'll end up making, all of us will end up making rational decisions, and we're going to resolve this. I'm very disappointed, and I'm shocked that we're in the position that we're in today. And I really cannot describe it. I can't explain it. To the facts, I'm getting away from opinion because that's where I get into trouble with folks. It's my understanding they are a national company. They don't have any other states where they have a whole state contract, but they have a lot of other big districts, and I think there are other, so I don't really know exactly all their business, but they have a lot of clients all over the country.
Mr. Chairman, although I've not been here, I've been following this issue, and I've been pretty well appraised of some of the things that are going on. If I'm getting into an area you can't comment on, you can just nod your head, but you can't comment on. One of the things that we talked about was that their contract period was coming to an end. I don't believe under our contracting process, at least as I understand it, that you could simply go out for a sole source or a singular source contract and just negotiate with the current vendor on this level of contract, that you had to put it out. And they seem to be very surprised by this, is the perception that I had from you.
We had already exhausted our extensions. It would be, I asked this question of DOJ today, of a guy in the business division. It would be extraordinary if we had tried to create a situation where we continued to sole source with them. When we first started this with Vantage, we were the national leaders. Nobody else was doing this. Now, there will be no reason to sole source. There was a reason to have an open competitive process because there are a lot of other companies out there now that can do this. And so we would have been shirking our responsibility if we hadn't opened it up.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it's just my perception that when they found out that they would have to compete to continue, they just chose not to compete in a very credible way. So he probably can't comment on that, but I'll just...
Representative Edwards.
What's the projected incremental cost of going to paper and pencil versus what we would expend if we continue to utilize the online process?
Sure. Chair DeLizio, Representative Edwards. I do not know the answer to the versus because I was never able to come to agreement. I can tell you what our last best offer was, and we can compare that to what we think we're going to spend. I don't mind sharing that. We offered $800,000 to get through the last 2 months of the year. Now, that's $100,000 a week. But right now we pay them about $100,000 a month. And that was just to get through the year. And a promise in writing that we would negotiate parameters for some kind of binding arbitration on these past issues. I have no idea how much, that would have tacked on to the $800K. Plus, we would have continued to pay our regular monthly, which is the base is about, say, $69,000 is the base, so another 2 months at $69,000 plus $800K. So, you could pretty easily, quickly get to about $100K. What we're going to pay to go to paper and pencil, we don't have it fully understand or know that yet, but we think it's going to be somewhere between $1.1 and $1.4 million. When we got the notice from Vantage back in January, I quickly thereafter instituted an administrative freeze at the department. We slowed hirings. Everything had to go through me that was new. We, stopped. Hopefully people stopped printing color copies, that kind of thing. And that was because I thought we were going to work very hard to cobble together dollars to put on the table that we didn't think we were going to have to get Vantage to work with us till the end of the year. So there's really, two reasons that I laid out in my testimony that I'll just simplify right now that we weren't able probably to finish. I mean, one, they never responded to our last best offer. But So we couldn't find a way to pay them everything they wanted without, you know, or make them continue to be the contractor. But also, as you heard in my testimony, we lost faith that they could continue to deliver the product. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, if we would have thrown $6 million at them, that they would have delivered the product.
Representative Barnhart.
I read in the Capitol Clips today that you filed a lawsuit. Is that true?
Yes.
Or Chair Lizio, Representative Barnhart, that's true. I don't mean you. I mean the Attorney General of the State of Oregon has filed a lawsuit.
On our behalf.
Yes. If I could. I think it might be useful if we got the portion of the complaint that contained the germane points.
Sure.
I don't need the opening page and the last six pages that had to do with odd things, but the part that contains your claim, I think it might be useful for the committee to have that. And I'm, as I'm listening to this and thinking about it a little bit, it seems to me as though there are a number of different claims of damage that you have in addition to the ones, in addition to the injunctive relief that you asked for, that the newspaper reported on. And I'm hoping that when I read that complaint, it will show that you've asked for all of those items.
And that was pro bono.
Councilor Barnhart.
Chair Lizio, Representative Barnhart, we are...
And it's worth what you paid for it.
We are exploring all of our options. Right now, we're trying to protect our most our interests. We're trying to make sure that they that we get back all of our intellectual property. They have things that are worth many millions of dollars to us, our test items that we created here in Oregon, and we need them back. And also all of the data that they may have that we will be able to use to avoid. Every bit of data that we get back is one more student that doesn't have to take a paper and pencil test. My wife works at an elementary school in Hillsboro. Her principal told her only four more kids in fifth grade need to take the paper pencil because everybody else has already met. So, you know, we need every bit of data we can get back so that we can reduce that. It also reduces the number on how many paper and pencil we've got to send out and bring back in grade. So we are focused on that first.
I represent Barnhart. Well,
thank you again. I'm simply referring to a newspaper article. It may not have any more validity than many other newspaper articles, but one of the claim that I read in the newspaper was that you had asked for that relief, and that Vantage's response was that you already have all of that data. I take it that you're not convinced that their claim, if they in fact made that claim, is correct.
Chair Lizio, Representative Barnhart, that we are not convinced of that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Morgan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think it would be good to have a short discussion on where the department goes from here in terms of bringing the program back online, and because TESA, I think, is an incredible, innovative way to deal with the amount of testing that needs to be done around the standards and the federal issues with progress through the system. And it's my understanding that the RFP brought forward a new vendor that will be providing a platform, but that the old vendor has the questions, and so there's a process around bringing the questions back in and having the new vendor put those into the new platform and then have those ready to go in time for the next season when the testing is used. So I'm hoping you can talk to us about that timeline. And then the other issue is that paper and pencil testing is really expensive, and the correcting of it, I think, carries a large price tag with it. And if you could talk to us about how the department is going to, first of all, what the extent of the expense is, and how the department plans to deal with that, which is an unallocated piece of cost that you have.
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, I'm glad that Assistant Superintendent Costi has joined me, because if there's something I can't answer, I'm sure he can. Back to front, that same administrative freeze, which really wasn't so much of a freeze, it just became a slow everything down that I instituted a couple of months ago in order to try to cobble together resources to pay Vantage to have them continue testing. We have realized some savings from that. Mr. Costi will tell you about some resources that that he's set aside also so that we can afford the, we don't know yet how much, 1.1 to 1.4, 1.5 to do paper and pencil. So we are going to try to pay for that out of internal choices that we can make and cost savings that we can make internally. That's how we are attempting to do that. As far as getting back up in
how much is the cost of the testing going to work out to be?
Well, we don't until we get all the data back from Vantage and we're confident we have it all. We don't yet know how many. We still don't know the number of how many kids have to test on every grade level and every subject. So I'm sorry, but I can't give you an exact answer. We are. I think we have per unit costs down. I think that we're there, but we still don't know exactly how many students are going to be impacted.
But are we talking about a half a million or 10 million, or where are we?
We're talking about a million plus.
Okay.
I'd say between 1 and 1.5. 1.1 and 1.5 is what I would say, but we're talking about this every day. So
is it realistic to assume that this late in the biennium you'll be able to realize that much savings from your budget?
Well, we were all the next come.
You want me to jump in? Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan. For your record, again, Doug Costi, Assistant Superintendent, Assessment and Information Services. With respect to how we're going to pay for that, my office has a biennial allocation of about $14 million set aside for assessment and information services. In addition to that, I have federal funds that I receive to the tune of about a little over $11.5 million. Those federal funds are allocated on an annual basis, and typically what I have is a portion of those federal funds are rolled over because I'm not required to spend those in this biennium. I'm given the flexibility to spend them into the next biennium, and those funds can be made available for this purpose.
So it's so within the restrictions, the federal restrictions would allow them to be spent in this?
Yes, that's specifically how they're to be used is for assessment purposes. It's a specific appropriation from the feds. With respect to your first question relative to the items, our primary concern with Vantage is not the return of those items. We expect them to destroy those items and not release or transfer those items to any other third party. That's part of the injunctive relief that we're seeking. And further, with respect to the items, the new vendor, when they come on board, one of the things that I did when I came into to this position was to catalog all of those items because they were in different formats in different places, and we put them into a standardized format and got them organized to a point where we can now submit them to a third-party vendor, our new contractor, so we're prepared to do that. We don't need to get those items back from Vantage. We just need them to destroy them and not release them. Otherwise, we would the security of our system would be breached.
So it should be then a fairly straightforward process for the new vendor to bring the program back online.
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, it's a little more complex in that they have to integrate into our student registration system, so they have to put a central login in place that's similar to the one that's in place right now that recognizes our student identifiers. The look and feel we are expecting to be similar to the existing system. We know it's not going to be just exactly right, but there's what we call a fit gap analysis. We'll look at their product. We'll look at the expectations or what the old product looked like, and we'll try and make it fit as well as we can. And that's some of the work that they're going to have to do to bring it up. Another component of the new work will be to develop an algorithm, what we refer to as the adaptive engine, that displays the items at the appropriate time to the students so that the student gets the right item at the right time, answers the right questions. One of the other issues is low reporting of the item pools. Each grade level and subject area has to have an item pool of roughly 900 items. So we've got to make sure those items, all of their distractors are loaded appropriately, and all of the graphics associated with each of those items are aligned properly, so that when they display on the test in a web environment, they're in a manner or format that the kids can comprehend, see, understand, and they're consistent with a paper form.
Mm-hmm. When is it needed? Is it needed as soon as school starts in the fall?
Chair Galizio, Representative Morgan, in September, schools are expecting to see TESA back up and running. We have the longest test window of any other state in the nation. We have a 9-month window with 3 opportunities, and our teachers are very much depending on that window.
Thank you.
All right, well, it looks like we're going past time. I appreciate coming and answering the questions. And not to make light of this, but I have a feeling there are students throughout Oregon who are learning about injunctive relief, or are certainly getting a different kind of lesson, which is unfortunate, but is arguably important. So thank you for coming today and discussing that, and tomorrow I look forward to talking about other elements. So thank you very much. And with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 5019, and we are adjourned.